This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee, in for his Doctor in the House show. How are you today, George?
I'm very good. Excited to talk about something different today.
I know. You're just thinking, as long as it's not COVID, right?
All right. Okay. Actually, this is somewhat COVID-related, right? Because everyone's talking about the three Cs and then, you know, life after the three Cs or current life during the three Cs, the COVID, the conflict, and the climate change, apparently.
Oh, nice one. All right. So, we are discussing what happens when medicines are in short supply.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been dealing with the shortage of chicken in our food supply.
Who would wonder that even the medicine will be in shortage?
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, I wasn't so worried about not eating chicken, but if you tell me my paracetamol is not in the pharmacies, I'm going to panic.
Really?
So, yeah.
Or worse still, for other medications,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. So the thing is that Health Minister KJ did come up with a reassurance that these shortages only apply to some over-the-counter medicines. Mm-hmm. But I want to find out more, right?
Yeah, we really want to find out the truth behind all these, right? Who better to tell us that?
Yes, the truth, but also, I mean, we can't be so short-term to look at, okay, so right now it's only OTC, but we need to be prepared now. What you call medicine security.
That's right, because prior to this, nobody has heard of like food security. Now even medicines is secure. I mean, it makes sense, right? And we need to have contingency just in case there is any disruption in any all the chain of delivery and logistics and everything.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. So who better to help us understand this? Dr. Mark Cheong, pharmacist and public health researcher, joining us via Zoom. Pity you can't be in the studio with us, Mark, but how are you?
I'm doing good, and it's good to see you and George again. Certainly,
virtually
a trip over. I should have hopped in George's car to come over.
Absolutely. Do call us if you have questions about this issue we're discussing today. If you've been affected, perhaps you've been out to the pharmacies trying to get your supply of medicines, and you know, you've been told not in stock, or if you have concerns about how it may affect you and your family members, you can call us at 03 77 32 900. You can also WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or we are on Twitter at BFM Radio. So I think perhaps we can get an understanding of what's the current scenario, Mark. What medicines exactly are in short supply?
Well, I think we don't have much more information than what the health minister has been telling us, and as well as reports from groups like the MMA. But it does look like what's prominently missing from the supply are a lot of these over-the-counter medicines used for cough and cold, paracetamol for fevers. And I think prominently what seems to be running low are the dosage forms that are used for children, the pediatric formulations of some of these common medicines. And so that's starting to present itself as an early symptom of supply chain problems in the medication supply chain.
Yeah. The pediatric formulations, that's interesting. Does that have anything to do with, you know, we're seeing a spike in hand, foot and mouth disease as kids go back to daycares, kindergarten, schools, picking up those childhood bugs again? Does it have anything to do with that, do you think?
Well, I think to some extent it certainly does. We are seeing a lot more respiratory infections happen among kids as they go back to schools and to playgrounds and start interacting with each other. But I think generally as well, you know, now that we are sort of coming off the back of the COVID pandemic, we do see a lot of families sort of being more vigilant in terms of medicines. And so everybody's now, you know, stocking up on fever medication, flu medication, in case you have flu-like symptoms from COVID and as such. So I do expect that many more families, especially those with young children, have been stocking up a lot more. So certainly an increase in demand there.
So, Mark, I would like to draw some parallel. And during the early days of the pandemic, we heard about people hoarding toilet papers and then people hoarding the face masks. Is this the case of, I mean, some parents just worry about the situation and then hoarding a lot of drugs? Or is it the supply chain that's an issue? Or some countries are just restricting their exports?
I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, so if this was a multiple choice question, it would be all of the above. Certainly from the demand side, as we said, you know, we do get the sense that more families, more people are actually stocking up on some of these medicines. And but I think certainly, of course, if people then start to panic on the back of news like what we've been hearing, then we can certainly expect to see more of a run for these medicines. And I think it's going to impact those areas which are perhaps a bit further out of the urban centers where they have fewer pharmacies as well as fewer GPs. But I think the major factor here is certainly from the supply side. We've been hearing from many parties now that a lot of it comes back down to the disruption in the global supply chain. So the war in Ukraine, as well as the blockade, or rather the problems that where things can't get out of Shanghai. So when raw materials can't come into the country, essentially we can't manufacture, you know, as much as we need for distribution in the country. But I think also of note is you have this situation where during the 2 years of the pandemic, many of our local manufacturers had actually started to scale down their manufacturing capacity. So in terms of manpower, in terms of their production lines, in order to sort of reduce costs, they've actually downscaled those numbers. So now as things open back up and there's a sudden surge in demand, a lot of it is having these manufacturers essentially play catch up. So they are trying to ramp up supply, but it does take time to actually manufacture these drugs and to distribute them.
Can we go a little bit micro in terms of that global supply chain? Because I think we don't realize how much we need in order to manufacture, or in terms of what we're importing. Because I was so surprised to read that even starch, which China and Russia are major exporters of, and even starch is an ingredient in medicines. Is that right?
Yeah, so you need a couple of things to essentially make a medicine that appears in your pharmacy or in your GP. You need what's called an active pharmaceutical ingredient, an API, which is essentially the main ingredient of that medication that gives you its effect, so like paracetamol. So in terms of APIs, those are largely imported. But it's really just more than these APIs. You also have other pharmaceutical ingredients. You've named starch as one of them, which are important to sort of make the dosage forms that these medications come in to bind different ingredients together. The other thing which sometimes people forget as well is the packaging materials. So your blister packs, other types of packaging that are necessary to preserve the condition of the medication. Now, some of these require certain metals and such, which again may not be available within the country.
That's right. I mean, that truly is the impact of the three C's, right? Because even climate change and the conflict itself is probably disrupting the raw material of starch, for example.
And we talk so much about the virtues of living in a globalized world, but this is where we can fail if we are not locally secure and sustainable. George, I mean, you know, have you ever entertained the thought that you might not have the medications that your patients need?
Well, I think I would like to split the medications into absolute essential, essential, and not so essential, presumably. I mean, as you know, in my line of work, you know, people will call the blue pills perhaps as not so life-saving in a way. And then, however, on the other hand, I do have many, many patients who are on prostate cancer medications. If they are not on such medications, for example, during the lockdowns, some of them are having difficulty even to cross district to come to the clinic, and they were really having detrimental effect on them. So I think to, like you used the word, entertain the thought of medicine security. I mean, I think this is a small warning sign to us. You know, I don't know what sort of like health impact it has on the children when we run out of cough and cold medicines across the counters. However, if we do not have enough reserve, and then I think the world or the healthcare provision can be quite disastrous.
Mark, from your perspective, because everyone's, some people are saying, oh, it's okay, it's just OTC medicines, right? But how do we look at this from a broader view?
Well, it may very well be that, you know, the current drug shortage in this moment is a matter of having backlog orders and affecting only the OTC. But I think, you know, if we look across the longer time horizon, you know, if these supply chains are not resolved, if the war in Ukraine is not resolved soon, this could simply just be the tip of the iceberg. Because again, you know, when it comes to things like starch, when it comes to things like packaging material, we use the same things for more serious medications, more essential medications, like those for cancers, like those for hypertension and diabetes. So if these, if the supply chain of these essential items are not resolved, then certainly we will see the shortage problem start to affect these other drugs as well. And so I think, you know, to George's point, certainly we would expect to see a lot of detrimental effects on patients' health outcomes and on the health system at large.
Mm. Mark, I mean, the current situation, although we get assurance from the Ministry of Health itself that it's only a minor setback, what sort of like adversity do you predict to see on, you know, children, for example, with such low supply of the over-the-counter medications?
Well, currently, certainly what would probably happen is you would have a lot of these children who would typically, you know, be self-medicated at home from drugs bought by the at the pharmacy, or they would normally go to the GP. Now, these children, when they fall sick, you know, after a couple of days of having fever and cough and cold that don't go away, they will very likely have to present themselves to the emergency at the hospitals. And in some cases, you know, if the child is mildly asthmatic to begin with, that may turn into a full-blown asthma. It may require hospitalization. Certainly, it will contribute to the congestion of the hospital, emergency centers, and that will have a knock-on effect on everybody else who needs to seek treatment. Mm. Parents certainly won't be having good night's sleep whenever the child is still sick.
And so, parents will be off work as well. Yeah. That will have an impact on, you know, livelihood as well in some sense.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just the thought of, and it sounds trivial, but a child's fever is never fun to deal with, you know, that those sleepless nights, you just want to give them whatever comfort that they can have, right? Let's continue this conversation when we come back. I want to look a little bit like the ripple effects, continue to explore that a little bit more with our guest, Dr. Mark Cheong, pharmacist and public health researcher, and joining me, my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We're discussing what happens when medicines are in short supply. Do call us at 03-7732-900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiao Yik, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee. It's our Doctor in the House segment this Friday afternoon, a sunny Friday afternoon, but we're discussing a pretty serious issue: what happens when our medicines are in short supply. You know, chicken, fish, vegetables, we're already hearing all that. Now our medications as well, and really important ones. Don't tell me that over-the-counter medicines are not important. Cough and cold medicines, paracetamol, the like, and especially the you know, children's formulations, as our guest Dr. Mark Cheong, pharmacist, has pointed out. So he's already sort of like outlined, right? We don't just look at what's happening now. We look at it could be the tip of the iceberg. It could affect more and more medications, including those that treat chronic non-communicable diseases, because the ingredients that are stuck in the global supply chain are needed for all of these other medications as well. And Mark, I'm curious to know, could a shortage in the market lead to price increases in the medications, or are prices fixed?
Well, I think theoretically, of course, you know, whenever it's something is in high demand, and of course, you know, everyone wants it and there's limited supply, there could, of course, be high increases. And then we have been hearing from some of the manufacturers associations already warning of the possibility of price hikes, you know, in relation to the higher cost of manufacturing and procurement of these raw materials. I do, however, feel fairly confident that, you know, with most of the suppliers in the Malaysian pharmaceutical political scene, there's probably unlikely to be, you know, anyone trying to take advantage of this situation in order to have price hikes. But I do think that eventually we will see price increases in the long term.
Mm. So we have a question here that I'm not going to mention the specific company, but our listener is pointing out that some of these drug companies, the multinationals, do have local production plants in our country. So where are these supplies going? Are they being exported and nothing is left for our market? Or is there a bigger picture we need to look at?
Well, I think it's certainly probably not an issue of, you know, drugs being manufactured and being sent overseas, leaving nothing for here. First of all, the drug shortages that we are experiencing certainly isn't an issue that's restricted to Malaysia alone. It's something that's actually happening globally. And so, again, it's coming off the backs of not having enough raw materials to actually manufacture enough to meet the demand. So I don't really see that as an issue.
Do you think one way, I mean, you know, we see India restricting exports and in Malaysia, even we are restricting our exports of chicken. Do you think one way of doing this will be restricting the exports of locally manufactured medications? Do you think we'll come to that in one day?
Well, I think it really comes back down to what is our country's plan to ensure medication security, if it comes to that. Now, it probably wouldn't be, too far-fetched to say that, you know, we probably should have plans where if we enter a stage where we have some sort of a crisis where the supply shortage of essential medicines is, you know, severely threatened, then those are certainly steps that we do have to consider taking. Mm-hmm. But I think the way things are at the moment, that's probably a step a little bit too far to consider for now.
Yeah, Mark, I'm interested to hear your view and also listeners out there's view about what alternatives, because apart from just holding and holding on to your own production, surely there are alternative way of ensuring your drug security is right. For example, are there alternative medicines that's available? And then, for example, you know, different brands, for example. And then can you just share with us what sort of, if you were to advise the government in terms of future long-term plans to ensure securities of medicine, what sort of like proposals can you put forward?
So there are probably a couple of things which we need to do. I think first of all, it's really starting to seriously think about medicines as an essential public good. You know, for the longest time, we've sort of seen medicines as a product, and in some cases, even a luxury product. And we've not looked at them perhaps as seriously as things like food and water and electricity. And so we need to start considering medicines, you know, as a serious component of our national security. So among the things that we probably need to have is to have a strategic reserve of essential ingredients, such mm-hmm. as some of the active pharmaceutical ingredients, as well as the other ingredients needed to manufacture these drugs. And certainly we can work off the basis of what is known as the National Essential Medicines List. So we do have an essential medicines list, which for the country, which is a list of medicines that the country has decided. These are the things that the majority of people are going to need for the majority of healthcare conditions. So we can start to consider actually having a reserve of these these ingredients to make these drugs, which we can then pass over to local manufacturers to actually make in order to close the gap in the form of supply. But I think the other thing we also need to do is to start to consider, well, what other countries and other places where we've not typically bought medicines from, can we actually source medicines from these suppliers as well? Especially in times of emergency too, you know, how can we very quickly actually look at these alternative suppliers and bring their products into the country, maybe make it easier for them to actually import some of these drugs and get through our regulatory processes so that we can get alternative sources of these supplies. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the things that we can consider doing.
I mean, have you ever thought about, you know, what about generic, you know? Mark, can you explain a little bit about differences between generic and also original? And is there a way of securing that medicine supply by mass production of generic medication? Will would there be any harm or efficacy disparity?
Yeah, so certainly I think, so what are generics? Generics are essentially copies of medicines that were, of branded medicines that were originally made by some of these big name MNC pharma companies. And over time, as their patents have started to lapse, other manufacturers, especially a lot of our local manufacturers, have now made copies of them. And these are typically priced lower, but are essentially the same drug. They contain the same ingredients and they work exactly the same way. And so, certainly it would be good if we have many generic versions of medicines. It allows us to diversify the number of suppliers we can actually source medicines for, so which means we have more supply to buy from. But I think in this current situation, what the drugs that we do see shortages of are essentially the generics themselves. So what's effectively missing is the active ingredients, which no matter whether you're making a branded drug or you're making generic versions of it, you still have to use the same ingredients. So if the main ingredient is in short supply, it doesn't really matter whether you're buying the top of the line branded drug or if you're buying the generic versions. Now, that being said, there are many drugs, especially for those which we use to treat the non-communicable diseases, especially many of the newer ones, where we don't have generic versions for them. They're still under patent legally. No one else is allowed to make copies of them. And so with those, we are stuck with a single source, a single manufacturer. And that means those drugs can be more vulnerable to shortages as well.
Mm. Can we consider locally producing those active ingredients then? Like, we keep looking downstream,
Yeah, I think that has been a proposal to be considered. Now, as far as I understand, we only have a couple of local companies that are making these active pharmaceutical ingredients. But I was made aware that they make them only in very small quantities, relatively speaking. And therefore, it's not that cost effective for many of our local manufacturers to purchase from them unless they are able to massively scale up their production and drive costs down. With that being said, it is worth our government to consider supporting this industry, to support this part of the industry in order to actually once again improve our medicine security by ensuring that there is actually a local source of these active pharmaceutical ingredients.
Mm. We have a question here from a listener who's asking, so who's taking stock of what medications are in supply, which ones are in low supply? And I wanted to link that to the point you made about we should consider having reserves of those drugs that are in the formulary, right? So who should oversee this? Who's holding that list and sort of like ticking it off?
And that's a really good question, because one of the other things that we do need, actually, if we are going to seriously make medication security an issue, is to actually have a good information network and as well as a notification system that links healthcare providers, our regulatory authorities, as well as the suppliers and the manufacturers, so that whenever there are impending signs of a drug shortage or shortages in certain key essential ingredients, the authorities can then be notified. And so we can start to make changes in how we distribute these medicines, how our public health facilities prescribe medicines to the patients, whether treatment guidelines need to be changed temporarily, whether how we distribute drugs at our hospitals need to be changed. As far as I know, we don't have that kind of system yet, certainly not one that is comprehensive and acts on day-to-day changes. But ultimately, I think we do need our regulatory authorities, our National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, to be sitting at the center of this network so that they can actually start to coordinate these efforts.
So that means right now, the only way you'd find out if something is in short supply is at that point of purchase. Is that right?
Yeah. So when you go to a pharmacy, or if you operate a GP, or if you operate a pharmacy and you you've put in your orders and they don't come, you know, and customer complaints start to pile up, then you start to get a sense that perhaps something is not really right. And then it goes up to ministry, and then I think then ministry puts its officers on the ground and for them to verify, yes, indeed, things are not very right.
Just like the old days when the pharmacies used to put up signs saying no more mask, right? And, you know, no more hand sanitizers. Mm. So that's when we realized that, you know, there's everything in short supply.
Okay, so we need that system like yesterday.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
But Mark, do you know if some of those strategies you mentioned about sort of like physicians and hospitals maybe tweaking the prescribing strategies, do you know if that's taking place right now?
Well, that takes place all the time. You know, sadly, drug shortages, periodic drug shortages do happen rather frequently, especially throughout our public health system, occasionally due to issues of manufacturing or whatnot again. And so within our public health facilities, doctors and pharmacists are rather accustomed to occasionally having to change how they prescribe and how they distribute and dispense those medicines based on supply changes. Mm-hmm. So that is something that is commonly done. And this is where you often hear of this practice of rationing that sometimes happens at our public health facilities. That too is a response to occasional drug shortages that occur.
Okay, so what's rationing? Because that sounds alarming, as if I'm going to be told, okay, you can't have your hypertension medicine for this month.
Will. Just like the rationing of the toilet papers, right? Okay, this household.
This is only how much you can buy.
You can buy. Yeah.
So typically, if everything is hunky-dory and there are no supply shortages, you know, you go and see a doctor for your hypertension meds. He writes you a prescription for 3 months. You might go to collect your medicine at the pharmacy and they might say, well, here's 3 months of your supply of your medication. Take it and then come back for a new prescription after that. When we start to have shortages, then this is where rationing takes place, where, you know, you present to the pharmacy with a prescription for 3 months worth of medication. The pharmacy might then say, well, I can only give you 1 month's supply, mm-hmm. because we have limited meds in the storage. And really this is done to ensure that, you know, so that as many people as possible who present themselves to the pharmacy throughout that period do at least go home with some amount of medication, rather than to give everything to a couple of people and just have everybody else turned away, and say, come back. Now, understandably, the effect of this is a lot of inconvenience. And for some of the patients, the inconvenience is not insignificant. It means taking additional days off. You know, you've got to travel all the way to the public health facility. There's a lot of waiting time. But certainly, I think, you know, this is done to ensure that as many people as possible at least have some medication on hand.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that at the moment we get that assurance from Ministry of Health saying that, you know, over-the-counter medicine only, it's only affecting a small pockets of population. But we don't really know how the whole thing about the COVID, the conflict and also the climate change is going to unravel in the next 12 months, for example. Mark, in the event that things continue to be problematic, right? Obviously, we're going to see people running out of medicine. Can you highlight what sort of medicines are dangerous for people to stop? Like, say, for example, if you just suddenly decided that it's run out of medicine, it's okay not to take it for a period of time. Is that going to be a danger, let's say, 6 months from today, that things continue to be going from bad to worse?
Well, I think, if we frame it as who's going to be, you know, most severely affected?
Who's vulnerable, yeah. You know, from cessations of certain medications?
Certainly, I mean, the one that comes right up at the top of my head are those who have diabetes. Mm. Right? And we have many, many, many people who have diabetes in the country, many of them on insulin, and you can't live without insulin if you're dependent on that. And so that would be a major group there. But certainly applies to anyone who has a non-communicable chronic disease. You know, if it's hypertension, if you have asthma, if you have diabetes, if you have to go for a period without any medicines, that's potentially life-threatening. you know, because you can't get your condition under control. Really, that leads to complications like strokes, heart attacks, you know, with diabetes. It means you go into, you know, diabetic ketoacidosis, which is a life-threatening emergency. So it is really not something to be taken lightly. Now, what we would hope for is that, you know, if such a severe situation were to occur, we would try to switch people to alternative medicines. So maybe drugs that are still within the same therapeutic class, or, you know, they still serve the same function, but are different from what you usually take. Certainly there are problems and issues with that, but, you know, we would be in this mode of risk reduction and risk management.
Mm-hmm. I guess now is a time for, you know, a lot of us to kind of like think about contingencies, right? And also to look at the bigger picture, is that how the whole world is intertwined and how vulnerable we can be if things get out of hand. It's a domino effect, really. Mm.
So, Mark, what's the one thing that you'd like to see being done right now, at least, so that we don't see that spiral that George described?
Well, I think certainly, you know, it seems to me that the ministry has started working on it. And one of the big steps is really getting in touch with our local pharmaceutical manufacturers to begin actually supporting the local need. They've reached out to the companies like Pharma Niaga to actually start reaching out to providers who are working in some of these areas which are likely to be most effective, and supporting them. Now, the next step from that is certainly to consider perhaps providing some of these private GPs and pharmacies access to the supply of medicines that are being held by our public facilities. Now, why do that? We have to remember that in our country, our GPs and our pharmacies actually take on a large burden of primary care. They are often the first line within to provide healthcare in the community, and they take a lot of load off our hospitals. So if they start to run out of medication, then we may see a lot of congestion at our hospitals. So one way of preventing that would be to consider actually allowing them to collect medicines from our public health facilities so that they can actually start continue treating people in the community.
Mm-hmm. Do you have something that you'd like to urge us as individual consumers or patients? You know, it does feel sometimes like this is beyond our control, it's nothing to do with us. But do you think there's something we can do?
Well, I think a couple of things. Certainly, you know, if you can avoid it, don't get sick. You know, of course, that's not applicable to those with chronic diseases. But I think in terms of cough and cold and the such, you know, try your best not to get sick. But I think for everyone else, you know, a couple of things. First of all, certainly don't panic. You know, as much as we've made this situation sound so dire, don't run out and buy everything that you can.
No
get
hoarding.
No hoarding, because that certainly exacerbates the situation, right? So don't panic. But I think if you're on chronic medications or if you regularly take medicines, you know, do keep an eye on what drugs you're taking and you know, how much do you have left of these medicines, you know, what are their expiry dates, and, you know, go out and replenish them only if you have to. But at the same time, also, you know, get a good sense of what medicines you are taking and what you are taking these medicines for. And if need be, you know, discuss with your pharmacist, discuss with your doctors, you know, might there be a problem with the supply of your medicines? And, you know, if not, is there a need to switch your medicines to anything else, right? So I think there are things which we can mentally get prepared for, but certainly not to panic and rush out and hoard.
Mm-hmm. Because wastage is a problem, right? And something that many of us are guilty of doing.
On that note, Mark, I mean, would you like to comment on that? Because I certainly see that. I dare not say it on air, but I will. But a lot of people kind of like, you know, go to government hospital clinic kesehatan and felt that because that one ringgit, and then they exchange for whole bags full of medicine. And then sometimes
they share it with their relatives.
That's right, share it. Well, if they share, it's okay, but it's left in the cupboard and then it's expired for, like, you know. And that sort of practices, it's truly a wastage, right? Do you see that? And am I the only person who observes such wastages?
No, I think this is a problem that it's probably the largest bugbear for those of us who work in pharmacy, especially in our public health systems. This issue of wastage, we see it, you know, it hurts our feelings sometimes. But I think I would caution against just immediately wagging our finger at you know, members of the public, which we see as wasting these medicines. We have this tendency sometimes to go, oh, you know, these are bad people. These are bad, unappreciative people who waste our medicines. I think it's worth sometimes taking a step back and considering what are the reasons for people choosing not to take the medicines that have been given to us. Now, you will have some which are perhaps recalcitrant and they don't want it. You know, they don't want their medicines for whatever reasons, and that's a segment of them. But I do find, you know, from my experience, you do have many people who actually don't know what they've been given medicines for. You know, they've not been told what those medicines are for. They've not been told how it works, how long they have to take them. And so in the absence of that information, you know, sometimes being then asked to take this funny little pill three times a day for forever, you know, it seems like a pointless thing. And so they stop. And we, on the other hand, you do have some patients who are extremely afraid of side effects, right? They read things on the internet, they hear things from their relatives, and they're extremely afraid and skeptical. And let's say they've not had the chance to actually discuss these things with a health professional that they trust, they decide the safer option really then is just not to take these medicines, right? And then you do have some for which taking these medicines regularly is really inconvenient. You know, we've had some patients in the past where, let's say, they've had to take diuretics twice a day, but they work the night shift, and it's terribly inconvenient to constantly have to go to the toilet to urinate when you are working the night shift, let's say, as a security guard. So it might just be easier then just not to take some of that medication, or not at all. So I think there are a lot of factors to why somebody might, you know, quote unquote, waste their medication. I think we need to do a better job of actually sitting down and listening to people, you know, when they say, you know what, sorry, doc, I've just not been taking my medication. Trying to our best to understand why that's happened. And in some cases, like I've told some of our patients, if you don't want to take your medication for whatever reason, you know, tell us, we'll see how we can sort it. In some cases, it means switching them to a medicine that they actually prefer and can take, you know? And that sometimes tends to solve the problem.
All right. A final message, perhaps, to wrap up our discussion today, Mark?
Yep. So I think, you know, on this whole issue of drug shortages, I think once again, you know, to the public really is don't panic, please don't do that. You know, keep aware of what you have and what you're taking, but certainly don't panic, go and panic buy. But I think for the rest, you know, those in charge and our policymakers, I certainly do think that we need to very seriously consider medication safety as an issue. We certainly do need to work very closely with healthcare providers as well as suppliers in the private sector to ensure that we have the reserves that we need, you know, to avoid any potential crises. So this needs to be of paramount importance.
John?
Shari, the two take home that I hear from Mark, I totally agree. First of all, no hoarding. Secondly, strategic planning. But I have better solutions in order to end medicine security. We have seen the back of COVID already, so we're one down of the seas. Now we just need to end conflict and end the, the environmental changes. Then we solve all the problems.
Okay, sorted. George is on the job.
That's right.
He's going to sort out all the other two.
No more conflicts and no more, you know, climate change. Then we'll be
on. Peace a chance.
That's right. Give peace a chance.
All right. Thank you so much. Something for us to think about over the weekend then. I've been speaking to Dr. Mark Cheong, pharmacist and public health researcher, together with my co-host, Dr. George Lee. You've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.